This is attorney Larry Rowe. Question: why would you take a local auto crash case to a huge out-of-state law firm? Be smart, stay local, and visit me at LarryLRowe.com.
Over the Reds, 5-4. Cleveland edged Baltimore 3-2. The Sunday night game won by the Cardinals over the Cubs 5-3-10. Mets beat the Dodgers 5-4. NBA Finals, Game 2, it goes to Golden State. Warriors beat Boston 107-88 to even that series at 1-1 each. NHL, Tampa beat the Rangers 3-2. Rangers still leading the Eastern Conference Finals 2-1. And Joey Logano, he edged Kyle Busch in overtime to win Sunday's NASCAR race. Morning news time is 8:20.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 580 WCHS, its employees, or WVRC Media. This is Retire Right Radio, a weekly show from John Burdett at 4th Avenue Financial that aims to answer your questions about financial planning, investing, and how to retire right. 4th Avenue Financial is located in downtown Charleston at 170 Court Street. More information online at 4thavenuefinancial.com. Join the conversation by calling 304-345-5858 or text 304-935-5008. On Retire Right Radio, let's go live to the studio with host Dale Cooper and John Burdett from 4th Avenue Financial.
And a very pleasant Monday morning to you. You're listening to Retire Right Radio. I'm Dale Cooper. That's John Burdett sitting across from me. You're listening to 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. Give us a call this morning, 304-345-5858, 345-5858. If you have any questions about how you can retire right, about the volatility, I guess you can call that, of the market right now, and how that influences your strategy, you can give us a call this morning, 304-345-5858. We'll have some topics that we'll touch on along the way. But John is back in studio with us this morning after a week off last week. And, man, we've had kind of a week of nice weather for the most part. We had a little bit of rain last week. That's been nice.
I got to go out hit a few golf balls yesterday.
So yesterday was the day for it.
It was a perfect day for it.
Oh, my goodness. We spent all day up in the country with my mom yesterday, and she lives on a mountain, basically. She has tons of room up there, and we just let the kid run around. And it was a good time. It was just it was needed, the perfect kind of temperature for that kind of thing. And on the backdrop of, like, the turmoil that's going on in the market, and take and give away, right? I mean, you get some, you give back. I mean, there was a couple of good rallies. I heard a couple of people starting to say we may have found the bottom. Who knows?
Well, you never know. I mean, we missed the week before last. We missed for the holidays, so
probably a good thing.
That was
a
pretty good week.
Okay.
And then last week we gave some of that back. The market is certainly in the process, I think, of trying to find a bottom. Frequently you'll see these rallies, and then maybe the market pulls back and kind of tests the lows to make sure that it holds, that sort of thing. So I think we're probably in a process right now that is going on. The market is up a little bit from the lows weakest point. The S&P was down right at 20%, which is bear market territory. And I think we're down 13 or 14 right now. So we're up off of the lows a little bit, for sure.
I know that one thing that I read last week is that I'm starting to hear about the potential of a third interest rate hike this year instead of just two. So we might be looking at, again, trying to control what inflation, if that ends up being needed, to raise rates a little
bit more. I think for sure we're going to have a series of those. I think the bond market is probably pricing in six.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
okay.
So I think that's already kind of baked into the prices to some degree. But inflation is still running hot. The jobs numbers that came out last week, the unemployment rate is still good, 3.6%, which is historically very, very low. Almost 400,000 jobs were added, so the jobs market is still good. And wages were up, I believe it's about 5.2%, which sounds great, except inflation is still running over 8%. So, folks are getting raises, but the concern is the raises aren't keeping up with the rising costs in the stores. And that is what the fear that's been creeping in is, like, okay, how does this affect the consumer on down as we get down into the year? And, of course, you saw some in the last month some earnings reports from Walmart and Target that were pretty lackluster. And so the concern is that, hey, consumer behavior is changing, and that could slow down the economy, which in a way is what the Fed is trying to do.
Right. I mean, it's like, oh, no, really? Oh, wait a minute. I mean, they've been kind of warning on that. I mean, we're trying to slow down the economy, folks. I mean,
right.
That's kind of
right.
what the warning has been.
The supply and demand of the goods that are available. So
I read one of the weird and things just kind of get kind of left out in deserts in times like this, I guess. I was reading a weird thing where all the department stores that were stocking casual wear and things along those lines are now going to have to lose a bunch on this casual wear because nobody's buying casual wear. People are buying more dressy clothes.
Right.
And so it's like there's all this, you know, all of your beachwear and things like that are actually should be going on sale pretty soon because there's an abundance of them. So don't overpay. Don't overpay for your jams. You know, nobody wears jams anymore, right? But don't overpay for them.
I used to have some great jams.
Oh, man, I miss the jams days. I was just thinking.
And Swatch watches.
Swatch watches. But do you remember, in between or right around that same area of time, and we're about the same age, so usually this works out pretty well. I remember I was driving home from my mom's last night, and so weird things just go through your mind. And I was thinking about the jams. I had seen this video earlier in the day. It was like growing up in the 80s, right? And I've seen a lot of those, and some of them don't really mimic my childhood. I happened to stumble across one yesterday that was like every single thing they hit on was mine, too. I was like, hold, was this like me? Did I do this and forget? Because it was like right down the middle. And for some reason yesterday, that made me a little nostalgic for things. And I was thinking about the jams and wearing like neon wristbands and headbands and things like that and like tank tops and all these things I wore when I was a kid. One thing that I wore, and I can't remember as a pudgy 10 or 11, 12, 13-year-old kid. I can't believe I wore these things. Remember bicycle shorts was like a fashion thing for a while? Like you had the jams, but then like you had the bicycle shorts. And even dudes were wearing them around, like dudes were wearing them around everywhere. I had those. That was not a look I should have gone
for. No, I think I missed that one.
But, good for
but
you.
I did have the members only jacket.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. One thing I wanted to ask you about, going back to the topic, and I just, this is more from a standpoint of when people run across things like this. Like, so I run across this on my Twitter, for example. So, you know, I follow some people in finances and things like that where I try to keep up on things, but I'm not an expert. So you run across statements on things. What in the heck do things like this mean? So this comes from JP Morgan and one of their official positioning outlooks or whatever when they were in a recent interview. I think this was on Bloomberg Radio this morning, and I flagged it. Many describe the recent market bounce as a bear market rally, but the chances are the stabilization becomes more durable. This is especially given the reduced positioning and cautious consensus outlook. And we note the market internals over the past month are pro-risk. It sounds like a lot of words, but I kind of garner a couple things out of there. If the market is becoming a little bit more pro-risk, that's according to J.P. Morgan anyway, does that mean that the flight to safety is not as a prevalent thing, or is this talking about something completely different? I don't understand sometimes because it seems like depending if it's J.P. Morgan or Deutsche Bank or whoever's making the official statements, they vary a little bit.
Well, that's – there again, as we've talked about before, that's what a market is, yeah. You know, competing opinions and somebody's going to be right and somebody's going to be wrong and they're both experts. I think, you know, what they're getting at there, as we've talked about before, you know, what made the first quarter so challenging was that everything seemed to be going down. Stocks were down. Bonds were down. It was one of those periods where traditional allocation didn't work, and all the money that was coming out of the asset classes was just being held in cash. And for the ultimate safety play, although when inflation is at 8%, it's not going to sit there for long because the value gets eroded. And maybe what they're getting at there is that cash has to find its way back somewhere.
I see.
And so the risk on, it's not so much that people are hungry and have a huge appetite for risk, but the safety of cash is not so safe for a long period of time at 8% inflation. So it has to find its way back into certain asset classes. So you've seen the stock market, like you say, rebound a little bit, you know, try to find a bottom. You've even seen the bond market rally a little bit. Even though rates are going to be hiking, the bond yields, the 10-year bond yields have actually come back down below 3%, and I believe they got as high as 3.2. So money is coming back out of cash and into more traditional asset classes.
I kind of threw that at John as a kind of a blind pitch there to hit it out of the park pretty well. But if you have any questions, give us a call this morning, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. There's always questions about how you can handle your retirement right, what strategies that you should adopt or things you should be looking at. You might be starting anew, or you might be looking at moving some things over, or you just have some questions right now. John can answer your questions here on the radio this morning at 304-345-5858. You can text over questions to 304-935-5008, and you can find out more information online, 4thAvenueFinancial.com. That's 4thAvenueFinancial.com, where, of course, you can click the link for to send John an email, and you can have you can schedule yourself a review, and it only takes 15 minutes. It's free, so you can take a look at your portfolio and see if there's any strategies, that is, and see if there's any tweaks you need to make or some advice that you can get that way. John did write an article that we're going to talk about a little bit this morning. I encourage you to head over to 580WCHS on Twitter or on Facebook, and you can take a look at this. And this is called Financial Illusions You May Not Know. And I like this. It's illusions, not illusions. And so I like this because this deals a little bit with wives' tales, almost folklore when it comes to people talking about the financial industry.
You might even call it noise.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. And that's what – a lot of these things are people that have just tried to find ways to label noise, right? Like they find something that maybe is interesting and they try to attach a label to it. But not all these things hold up under scrutiny, right?
That's correct.
So let's talk about some of these things. Different types of, well, let's start with the beginning of the year, because we always hear this a lot when New Year comes on, and we even talk about it some here. You do a good job of kind of calming things down. I was like, hey, January is just another month. You know, I mean, largely speaking, we don't look at it any differently. But there's people that think that January is kind of the barometer for the rest of the year or for the first quarter or whatever it might be. Like whatever happens in January kind of sets the stage.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily like that.
Oh, no, not at all. If you parse statistics, you can go back and find, you know, something to prove whatever it is you're trying to prove. And so the saying goes, the January barometer is, if the market is up in January, hey, it's going to be a great year in the market. If it's down, it foretells a rocky year for the market. And there are certainly some years that is the case, but it is not a pattern that really holds any water, or does it make sense? I mean, you know, how does what happens in January, you know, predict what's going to go on when so many events happen and unfold throughout the year that are unpredictable? You know, what happened with COVID? I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what happened in January when events like that happen. So certainly not an investable premise.
It's so interesting that we have so much in our life almost default to old sayings on. You know, there's a lot of that stuff.
People like to ascribe, you know, meaning to things that seem random, and order to things that seem random. And I think that's just human nature. And I think that's where some of these things come from. It's just, how do we make sense of a market that sometimes doesn't make sense?
You know, and you're mentioning on stats and things like that, and just having easy things to reference on in baseball. We talk about baseball a lot. I don't know if people talk about this as much, but you probably recognize the reference, the Mendoza line. You know, people talk about the Mendoza line a lot. Generally speaking, it's like, you know, you got to keep your batting average above 200, right?
Right.
Number one, Mendoza's career batting average was 215, not 200. He struggled around 200 for a long time, but he had a year like in 1980 where he batted 245. Right. If you take that one year and take a look, I mean, he's probably had months within that year where he batted like 300 or 286 or something like that. If you take that sample size and you look at what the Mendoza line is, you're looking at a guy that was pretty much league average. You know, right. He had about 250. You know, he did some damage at the plate. He did some different things. But broadly speaking, over the course of a career that lasted 9 years, we know him as the Mendoza line. That's the Mendoza line that you're supposed to, your batting average is supposed to be above or whatever.
That.
Probably not. It answers the question, right? Would you rather have notoriety for anything, or would you rather be famous for something good? Because this is definitely not something good.
That's right.
Definitely not something good. And I was looking at it to say, he wasn't a good player. It's not like we're right. missing things. But at times, he was not as bad as a player as the Mendoza line would suggest. And that, it just kind of neatly dovetails into these easy reference points that we use even for financial markets or something like that. the definition doesn't necessarily hold up when you look at it under scrutiny, and especially over a longer period of time.
Right, right. Yeah, you see that with home runs all the time. Somebody has a hot month, and he's going to hit 95 home runs this year, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Now, the one thing, the next step on your list, and by the way, we're talking to John Burdett from Fourth Avenue Financial this morning. We're talking about financial illusions. These are things sort of like old wives' tales or myths that have to do around the financial market. If you have one of your own and you'd like to share and you want to run it past John, give us a call, 304-345-5858, 345-5858. You can text over the responses as well to 304-935-5008. The Super Bowl indicator is an interesting one just because in recent times, I think in 2016, there was several different sports things that happened that only happen in certain years where there's like presidential upsets, where there's like crazy things that happen politically and things like that. And 2016 actually played into that really well. Right. I think the World Series was a 3-1 World Series advantage to the team that ended up losing, which had only happened in previous times during like Republican administrations taking over or something along those lines. The Super Bowl was won by the AFC team that was down by X amount. That was the year that the Patriots came back from 28 points down and ended up beating the Falcons in the Super Bowl. I think there was a heavyweight championship. There was like four or five different coordinates that you could look at in the sports world that were all things that favored turmoil in politics or favored generally Republicans. All that came true in 2016. It was really, really weird, but that's just a correlation of things that stack up, coincidences, really. That doesn't mean there's really a Super Bowl indicator for the market or anything like that.
Right. Like you say, I think it's, there again, it's people trying to find order in things that seem like chaos. And, you know, the Super Bowl indicator is the one where the AFC wins the Super Bowl, then the stock market's going to drop.
Right.
And the NFC, it's the opposite. And, you know, 2008 should have disproved that. You know, here we go, that we're supposed to have an up year based on the Super Bowl indicator. And,
right.
You know, we end up in financial crisis. So you know, how anybody can put weight in that now, I think now it's just something to write about for writers to write about.
Yeah, right. How wrong this is, right.
Right, when the time comes around every
year. And this one, as a football fan, this one's fairly easy to suss out. For a long period of time in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, when the stock market was growing pretty right. strongly, it was mostly NFC winners. The AFC went through a long drought, or a drought where they weren't winning very many Super Bowls. So obviously, when you throw those coordinates into a market that was going up anyway, it's going to look like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an easy one. That's an easy one to figure out, but people attach these things to it. And there's a lot of things that go into it. Our human necessity to find patterns where there are no patterns, you know, we're always trying to pick those things out, right. Makes it, what's it called, I can't remember the word now, but there's several different psychological conditions that goes into that, always looking for images, you know, faces and things, always looking for patterns and things, because we're humans, we identify with those things, our brains are always looking for them, but sometimes we have to be careful, and that's, again, why you need a professional sometimes to advise you against things like the presidential election cycle theory, which is another one that's out there, which if you didn't know a whole lot and if maybe you didn't follow things, you're like, well, that sort of makes sense. We're in a presidential cycle. Presidents affect the market a lot, right? Which, no. But people right. think that they do. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, that the presidential election cycle theory, that one makes sense, but not either, right?
No, not so much. I mean, you know, you have a theory that the third year is going to be the best year because you know, I guess the administration is pulling out all the stops to make things good for the reelection.
Right, right, right. Sort of that's where you get all the money for your reelection, right?
Yeah. So that's the theory, and statistically, you know, you can go back and look at the first year, the second year, the third year, the fourth year, and rates of return over time. And it is true, I think, that the third year has a slightly higher, you know, return. But you have to think about. How many sample sizes are there?
Right.
You know, a couple of good, really good years and can really skew an average if you don't have that many sample sizes.
Right.
And so some of that plays into that as well.
And also treating all data like virgin data, or treating all data like it's the same. We had a great thing that came up on Hotline last week where we were talking about there was a statistic about the Celtics and how the Celtics, after leading in a finals, have never lost. Like after leading 1-0 or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but we had a caller that called in and made the great point. That statistic is so heavily weighted towards all those great Celtic teams, not even the Bird era teams, but the teams in the 70s before that. All of that data is so weighted towards that. It doesn't really mean anything because you're basically taking a team that was a dynasty for a long period of time and assigning this one stat to overweighted for that one team that was so great and so much better than the rest of the league at the time. And so you can look at that now and say, well, the Celtics have never lost a series in where they opened up with a one game advantage. Yeah, but so much of that had to do with teams that had Bill Russell on it and then teams that had Larry Bird or something. I mean, it's not the same thing as this young team that's around now. So, and gambling, I think, plays a lot into that because Gambling Trends looks at things like that. Well, the Boston Celtics, if they're up by one game going into the NBA Finals, they have yet to lose one. And people will wager off of that trend. Right. When that trend is baked into stats that are, in some cases, 40 or 50 years old, that can be a problem.
And also, when you think about these things that people are using or thinking about in the market, if it was valid, if it was true that there was a pattern there, it wouldn't work for long because if something is predictable, then what's going to happen? Investors are going to put their money there earlier and earlier to try to jump ahead of the pattern. And before long, that's going to skew that data. And so if it truly works, it won't persist in an active market.
That is a great point. John Burdett, once again, for 4th Avenue Financial. We're just talking about different things that can influence you that are kind of myths in the financial market. We've talked about the January barometer this morning, the Super Bowl indicator, the presidential election cycle theory. And just in my experience in looking at comparative data and the way that people come about these types of sayings, pretty much any time that the coordinates are taken off of the subject, it seems like a lot of times it's just reaching for correlation where you don't have the causation. So if you're like, every time a Marvel movie opens over $100 million, the stock market goes up. You know, it's like, okay, there might be a correlate. I mean, okay, that might be true. Okay, fine. But that doesn't mean there's a causation between that link necessarily. Right. And so people throw out all kinds of correlations sometimes thinking that they're making a relevant point or they found something that's subtle or nuanced. But the fact of the matter is, ipso post facto, one thing following another doesn't necessarily mean that those things are related in some way. And you need to be really careful of that.
And I think you also need to be careful how many of these things may be marketing slogans that somebody is using
clever
to get you to take action that they want to have. You know, like, oh, this happens and this means this is going to happen in the market. You buy gold now and, you know, things like that.
Like fake predictions, like saying something that's a prediction that you actually know is going to happen and then using that to say, well, if this does happen, then you need to
then you need to
move this
action.
Right.
I think there's some of that that goes on as well.
That gets into bad faith even, huh? Can anyway.
Some of the marketing campaigns are questionable.
Now,
none that are here.
No, of course not. If somebody's out there, and we have a lot more of these that we're going to go through, but if someone is, again, we've talked in the past about the folks that in previous years, like if you've come up of a certain age, like if you're probably a little younger than I am, and you've been kind of doing your own thing as far as your retirement and stuff like that, in the last decade or so, you really couldn't miss. You know,
right.
There was not much, at least since 2009 or so, you really couldn't miss. And if you were in before 2008 and held through, you came through the other side in pretty good shape anyway. But if you're somebody that's been, you know, maybe patting yourself on the back a little bit, like, hey, man, my portfolio looks great. I did a great job. Maybe these last few years, those aren't looking so good. And maybe there were some sayings that you thought were actual barometers that you were going by that suddenly aren't necessarily working anymore. It's like, well, you know, that doesn't work now. These are all things that you might run into, and it may worry you a little more if you're not somebody that is educated in the market, if you're not somebody who understands the nuances that are behind these things. And this is yet another example of a reason why, if maybe you've been going it alone or maybe you've been trying certain strategies, this might be the opportunity to have a professional take a look at these things, because it's a lot easier to have somebody that knows what they're doing, like John, to steward your future, really, your financial future when it comes to your retirement through times like this, rather than relying on things you may have learned when it was impossible to fail.
Right. It's like the great philosopher Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And that's essentially what's happened the first few months of the year. I mean, other than COVID, which was a very sharp, downturn and a very sharp correction. It was easy to gloss that over because it wasn't a persistent downturn. We really haven't had anything significant downturn since 08.
Right.
That's a long time for people to be accustomed to a rising market and the feeling that, you know, I know what I'm doing. I have all this under control. You know, when the market's going up, everybody looks like they have a great plan.
Was there anything before this is, and this is always when you start talking before times, and I don't want to get into it from a political standpoint, but just from a recency standpoint or keeping things in mind, I seem to remember before the election in 2020, there being some concern about how the economy was burning and what was going on, and if things didn't go right before COVID is really what I mean. If there wasn't proper stewardship through that area, that there could be some problems, some give backs there, that the economy was starting to slow down a little bit. I don't know if any of that was true or not.
Well, I mean, when you step back and think about it, and I was surprised myself at how deep we could shut things down, to be honest with you, without causing even more problems than we have.
Oh, my.
But, you know, you start restricting the production of goods and services by forcing people to stay home and basically lock down. You throw money, free money, out into people's hands to spend. And now there are less goods and services being produced. What's going to happen to prices? You're going to have inflation.
Yeah,
you're going
right.
to have – I mean, that makes a lot of logical sense, you know.
I mean, there's a straight line. It is logical, yeah.
You know, that's you know, in a growing economy, when your production is up and things of that nature, that's you know, disinflationary. Think about technology and computers and things like that, TVs. You know, they've gotten cheaper and cheaper and cheaper as competition and things have and technology has driven the prices down. I mean, an innovative, productive economy is really disinflationary when it's functioning correctly. And the environment that we were imposed upon in COVID you know, I think is what we have now. And now the question is, how do we unwind that in a way that is hopefully a softer letdown than another, you know, economic downturn? And it remains to be seen what will happen there.
Yeah, we're still in that holding pattern. Is there logic behind the thought of having a diverse economy, just like having a diverse portfolio, having... You know, we've offshored so much of our manufacturing, and you hear, and again, this competing theories, right? It's like, if you can produce it cheaper elsewhere and you do it, I mean, why do you have to have American workers that are making these widgets at no cost when you can have somebody in Indonesia do it or whatever it might be? But then the thought is that when you don't have those onshore, you don't have that capacity, that does that get you imbalanced in some way? Is it better to have manufacturing, even if it means that prices ultimately are a little higher? I don't know how.
I think global trade is what we should aspire to personally.
Seems to make most sense.
If it is truly free.
That's the deal, right? Yeah.
Which it oftentimes is not.
Look at the baby formula, right?
Right. And so, but I think that when there are things that upset the apple cart, you know, you get into these environments where the supply chains are certainly stretched. So there are risks to having that, you know, global supply chain as we've seen right now. Where if that were more onshore, we probably wouldn't have as many, you know, kinks in the system that need to be worked out. But we would also probably have higher prices all along the way. And now, so what is the right balance there?
Right.
I can't answer that question.
That's always where it is. Yeah, that's it's a curious
but
one.
But it's like when Katrina came through New Orleans, I mean, that was a disaster because the supply chains totally broke down.
Right.
Generations before that wouldn't have been the case because everybody had their own farm and grew their own food and had their own livestock and things were done more locally. And, you know, that is the danger of the supply chain. It's a great – when it works well, it brings abundance and selection. and cheaper prices and all of those things. But when it breaks down, it can really take a while to get it back in order.
And there is an interesting discussion in there. I had a little bit of one that kind of dovetails into that with Scott Lissicum. He's a researcher for the Cato Institute that works on trade and free trade and things like that. And he's pretty adamant on that. Same thing, free trade is the answer, but we restrict ourselves so much with actual free trade that when there are supply chains issues like this, this is why it comes up, is you have these weird, archaic laws that are built in or restrictions that are built into how you can trade, what you can trade, and where you can get it from. Some of it just doesn't make any sense at all because it's like in some cases a century old that hasn't been updated. You have things like the Jones Act that, I mean, there's all kinds of weird stuff that makes things way harder than what it should be if we're truly going to be a global economy. And those are some of the things maybe we should look at that would simplify the future a little bit if something like this would happen.
Yeah, I think streamlining that certainly makes sense. Like you say, if trade is free, both sides benefit.
Right.
You know, you trade one thing for another because both sides think it's a good deal. Well, how is that bad for the economy or the world? It really shouldn't be on the face of it. But
it's bizarre too, and it's way above my level. But when I listen to some of these financial shows and different things like that, when they talk about trade and trade calculations, there's actually a fairly complex formula that goes into how that affects the health of how it's considered the health of our import export economy. I mean, I forget what the ratio is, but there's a number that's applied to it, and they figure those things out. Looking at trade as like just a balance sheet of pluses and minuses is kind of short sighted and can lead to some mistakes, I think. If you're just looking at it, we're winning or losing trade, it shouldn't really be a win or loss
right,
thing.
And there are a lot of things that how do you calculate certain things? You know, how do you calculate a scientist that the United States imports from another country?
Great point, yeah, right.
That comes here to develop his, you know, new goods or services because there's more opportunity here, there's more capital here to fund it and that sort of thing. You know, that's how do you count that in a trade?
Right, that's very true. That's very true.
You know, there were issues in the 80s when Japan was going to take over the world, and you know they bought Rockefeller Center, and you know, everybody was freaked out about that. But remember, that was a transaction where they gave money to somebody in the U.S. that owned that building.
That's right. Yeah,
and they only sold it because they thought they got a fair price for it, and the money didn't disappear. It was reinvested somewhere else. Who knows where? But wherever they reinvested, they must have thought it was a better return on their money.
Right.
So even in that, while that was a trophy building that people used as a barometer of the strength of the U.S. falling, it actually was not that at all. It was a sign of strength that somebody would want to invest in that building in the United States, and the money wasn't lost. The resources weren't lost. It was just redeployed.
Great information, as always, from John Burdett from 4th Avenue Financial. We still have some things we're going to get across before the end of the program. Hey, we're sneaking up on time. We have about 8 minutes left. We need to take our commercial break. You can give us a call this morning at 304-345-5858, 345-5858. Maybe you have a financial myth that you would like to run past John. You can give us a call there. You can text over your question to 304-935-5008. We're going to take a break and be back right after this. You're listening to Retire Right Radio with John Burdett from 4th Avenue Financial. I'm Dale Cooper on 580 WCHS, the voice of
Ready for a getaway? Vacation is calling your name, and it's time to say yes to your next trip with a vacation loan from Members Choice West Virginia Federal Credit Union.
Now through June 30th, you can get up to $1,500 with rates as low as 6.99% and up to 12 months to pay back.
Get your summer started off right and apply for your vacation loan today.
Stop in to 201 Ohio Avenue in Charleston or apply online at memberschoicewv.com.
Loans are subject to credit approval. Additional restrictions may apply.
It's markdown month at Todd Judy Ford. That's right. We're repricing our entire inventory and putting more vehicles on special than ever before. The dealership with the most vehicles to choose from is also the dealership with the most money in discounts. And we need your car. Trade-in values are at record highs and discounts are huge. That might mean that you can trade up for less than ever. But hurry, these deals won't last forever. Just go to ToddJudyFord.com and see for yourself or check us on Facebook for daily specials.
En Family Dollar sabemos que quieres más para disfrutar tu verano. Por eso encontrarás más en cada tienda, como nuestra gran variedad de helados y postres congelados para refrescar y consentir a tu familia. Family Dollar, te ayudamos a hacer más.
You want 8 of the flutes and onyx.
Shira's hand-blown glassware blows right off her store's shelves.
Check the back for more indigo bowls.
She needs an inventory manager to help keep her stock on lock.
These are 100% porous silicate. Those aren't. Hey, can someone check the temp on the kiln?
Indeed can help her hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. We instantly connect you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Earn up to $500 in sponsored job credits by conducting interviews on Indeed. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Retire Right Radio with John Burdett from 4th Avenue Financial. Taking your calls at 304-345-5858 or texts on 304-935-5008.
You're listening to Retire Right Radio, 580 WCHS, the voice of Charles and John Burdett sitting across from me. I'm Dale Cooper. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday morning. Man, we ended up going pretty long before that break. We have a few
long-winded
things. Yeah, man, I don't know. That's probably my fault. But a lot of good information that we've been talking about some myths or illusions in the financial. We're just past the month of May, so I wanted to hit this one. This was the last one that was on your article. So we're now in June. But one of the things that, and you didn't want to do that this year, that's for sure, but sell in May and go away. What's that all about? And I've heard that one a lot.
Yeah, a lot of times. What happens, basically, a lot of folks, well, in the country, but certainly on Wall Street, they go on vacation. You know, trading volumes are less during the summer, generally.
Makes sense,
when trading volumes are less and an event happens, you might get more volatility. I don't know that, statistically, it makes sense to abandon your, financial plan based on the season. I think when you look at a personal financial plan, you're looking what makes sense for me for the long term and the goals that I have. And all of these sayings, all of these things that we've talked about really shouldn't have any bearing on your personal situation.
Yeah.
And you got to think a much longer term than thinking that you're going to outsmart the market on the short term. That is not a game you're going to win consistently. But you can win in the market if you focus on long-term goals, you allocate your money in the way that makes sense for your goals and your life. And that's how you're going to win long-term.
It really seems to me that that the thought that – and we apply this to so many different things in our life, but we really like to try to seek out shortcuts. We like to get the dowsing rod, you know, to try to find water. We like to try to stick our finger in the air to try to figure out which way the wind's going to blow, you know, coming future. We look at the farmer's almanac, hoping that that's going to give the divine some inspiration on what the season's going to come like. It's not very accurate. You know, I mean, we like things like that because it gives us some sense of control. But it's better to understand that you actually don't have that control and act accordingly than pretend like there is some control.
Long-term thinking is the answer. And before we go along those lines,
yes.
Today is not only D-Day, but it is my anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. Wedding anniversary?
Wedding anniversary.
Congratulations. Yes. My goodness.
24 years. So
wow.
I am not as young as I used to be, but 24 great years. It's my wife, Amy, I picked a
good one. Who hasn't aged, right?
She is not aged today.
Right.
No, I picked a good one there. So that's, kind of plays into some of the things we talk about.
Long-term investment, right?
Long-term investment and truly finding the right partner for your life is the best thing you can do.
Well, congratulations. Happy anniversary to you and Amy. That's great news.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's John Burdett for 4th Avenue Financial. That is a great – that 24 years is a great benchmark. There is no doubt about that. You're a young guy, too. So, I mean, that's a long time.
You know that Neil Young song, Old Man, Look at My Life.
There you go, right?
24 and there's so much more. Now I'm the old man in that song.
Oh, man. That's a great point. That's a great reference. John Burdett for 4th Avenue Financial, not against making a classic rock reference from time to time. That's for sure. And you can find out more information online. It's 4thAvenueFinancial.com. You spell out the whole thing, 4th Avenue Financial. Do that same search on Facebook. You can like the page there. Be kept up to date with any goings-on at 4th Avenue Financial, like online seminars. Also, that'll take you to the pages where you can register and schedule yourself a consultation. You can get a consultation, a 15-minute look-in, and that's free that John can take a look. And their phone number, 304-746-7977, 304 404-746-7977 is an easy way to get a hold of 4th Avenue Financial. Just if you have any questions, if you want to take a look at what your financial future would look like under the stewardship of a professional. Again, 4thAvenueFinancial.com. The phone number is 304-746-7977, located 170 Court Street, downtown Charleston. That's across from the town center and right next to National Travel. John, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks a lot.